E. Casey Foundation.
Midpoint for Thursday, December 14th. I'm Mitch Perry, reporter with Florida Politics, your host each and every Thursday at this time. Thanks so much for joining us. And joining me in the studio for the whole hour, we're going to talk local news, television news, I should say, media, politics, and other assorted topics with Mike Deason, who retired after nearly 50 years in the media business earlier this spring, and that includes 35 years here in the Tampa Bay area market. Mike, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
It's great to be here, Mitch. It really is.
All right. So, Mike, when you announced your retirement via Facebook in March, you wrote, "It's something I've been thinking about for a while, especially because of the changing landscape of TV news. I know this is the right time," and you know that you plan to travel, work on a book, and spend time with your family. So let's talk about what you've been up to. I know if those of you, us who follow you on Facebook, we've seen some of your commentaries, and when I saw I bumped into you a few weeks ago, you're talking to me about you're doing some documentaries as well. So tell me about that.
I am. When I retired, again, the TV business changed a lot.
Yeah, I want to get into that a little later.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there were things I wanted to do, and among them were commentary. And as a reporter, you've got to be objective. You can't do commentary. Even though as an investigative reporter, you can sometimes say, here's an issue we have to tackle because there's something wrong, and we try to expose it. And I also have to say, just as an aside on that, on a lot of stories, we thought there was something wrong, and we would spend time researching it. And then we'd say, you know what? It's not really here. What we thought was here, and we would just drop that story immediately. People think, well, they've got an agenda,
right? Exactly. You're going to find a way to get there somehow.
Right. And sometimes we just didn't get there. And if that was the case, we'd say, that's not going to happen. I always go down.
Yeah, and digress.
Digress, yeah, like, which is why my book is more than 703 pages, and with an editor right now trying to cut it down. So
the commentaries?
The commentaries, it's something I wanted to do. So that was on the list, and I'm doing them once a week called If I Were a King, and that's what I think should happen in the Tampa Bay area after 35 years here. This is my home, and I have plenty of opinions. You know me well enough to know that I'm not shy about expressing my opinions. I was a pain in the butt at the TV station, inside as well as out.
Is that right?
Well, yeah, sure. Because, I mean, I'm the type of guy that uncovered untruths, and management, no matter what company you are in, will sometimes tell untruths or do stupid things. I would point that out all the time. In fact, if they'd have a corporate meeting and they'd say, any questions, Mike? And then they knew, didn't matter to me. So I wanted to do that. I have longed to do documentaries. Long form TV, I think, can have the most impact. And in the investigative pieces, you get more than the minute and 30 seconds for the regular. But there were so many more things I wanted to delve into. So I'm in the middle of three documentaries right now. One we're almost done with is about the economic impact of climate change, which has been a fascinating piece. And my favorite part of that story is, among the people we've interviewed, is David Jolly, former Republican congressman from Pinellas. And I thought he had the best soundbite where he said, because the Republicans deny the obvious science, they don't get a seat at the table for the solutions. I thought that was profound, because he says he thinks that there are different solutions that we can go to. I mean, he's big into incentives instead of mandates and all that. But I thought that was a profound part of that. So I'm doing that. I'm almost done with that. I'm working on one on autonomous vehicles.
Right. We saw you at the conference last month.
Right. And there are so many societal impacts, not just of cars driving around without drivers, but also, for example, cities are going to lose a tremendous amount of revenue in terms of the parking they get from the meters, the parking garages they own, the tickets that they issue for speeding, DUI. I mean, the good effect, it will stop DUIs.
So that's what your documentary will look at, that, the implications of what will happen?
Yeah, well, first of all, the overall. I mean,
what's actually happening.
What's right. happening with it. But then the implications, and cities have not prepared for this at all. So, I mean, it's an overall look at mm-hmm. autonomous vehicles, but the societal impact. I mean, even for truck drivers, how many people are in the trucking industry that will lose their jobs? It's not a good industry to go into. And then the final one I'm currently doing is about the school system and the inability to help kids who read below reading level. They've got some programs in effect right now that absolutely do not work, that they spend millions of dollars on, and this is nationwide, and it's been shown that has happened, that they're not improving the reading levels of the kids. But the companies that produce these programs also spend millions of dollars in campaign contributions to the people who make the decisions, or the legislators who are on the committees that help choose the textbooks. And I've run across a program that teaches kids to read through singing that has had 2 4-year academic studies that show they work. In fact, they tested them in the Hillsborough school system, and they work. They help the kids go up grade levels, and the Hillsborough school system doesn't put it in. In fact, in one part of the documentary, I was in Polk County last week shooting at a school in Auburndale, and we had to be there at 7 o'clock in the morning because the principal is so impressed with the efficacy of this program that he wants it in his school, but the Polk school district won't approve it, so he has to use the program before school starts. And it's helping kids pass the FCAT, increase their grade level anyway.
Yeah.
So those
are coming up. Now, what kind of distribution vehicle are you going to have here?
That's a big question.
Yeah, right.
Okay, on the climate change one, I'm not the producer of that. I was hired to do that, and the guy who's producing it believes he can get it on Netflix.
Okay.
I'm hoping that's true.
Sure.
Because it will open up an entree for
my
other one. So. Whether that happens or not, you know, I'm just the hired journalist doing the interviews, writing the piece, and have most editorial control, not complete. He's the one that's paying for the project. So I'm hoping that's it. Once I finish these things, then I'm going to look to see that. But then people are pitching me all the time. There's another group in St. Pete that asked me if I'd work with them on a documentary about the water crisis and the sewage crisis in St. Pete. So I had lunch with them last week. And Tampa's new police chief pitched me on a documentary about the problems of, he said, well, I came to work as a cop 27 years ago. The problem was crime in the black community, black-on-black crime. And we said, we're going to stop this, we're going to solve this. And he said, 27 years later as chief, the problem is still the same. And he wants to do, he said, that could be an impactful documentary. So I'm keeping busy.
Yeah, it sounds like it very much. Again, if you're just tuning in right now, we're speaking with Mike Deason, a former reporter for Channel 10 WTSP here. And as you just heard, he's got a lot of projects going on since he retired. So Mike, let's go back. Now, you mentioned your book's coming out hopefully in the springtime.
Hopefully.
Your memoir, it's finished. It's in the being edited as we speak. So it is a lengthy career. In fact, just before we went on the air here, you talked about it because we're here in radio. And you talked about how you worked in radio. So you've been in the business since, what, 66? Is that correct?
1966 was my first time on radio, 1968 in TV.
So you were 18, right?
Yeah.
Right out of high school? Right.
Yeah, I was in college.
You started freshman year?
Freshman year in college. I got a job.
And where were you going to college at?
University of Missouri.
Okay.
Which if you're an aspiring journalist.
Right, the Mizzou. Journalism school, right?
Right. So I'm not necessarily a good example, but really is a fine journalism school.
And where'd you grow up?
In Chicago, suburban Chicago. And my high school, I always knew I wanted to do this, always. Or a pitch for the Cubs, but I had no control, which made that not a qualification to allow me to pitch. Maybe very qualified for broadcasting to have no control.
Indeed. So radio and TV, you were saying you were doing both at one point.
I was. That way in a lot of places. In when I was in Rochester, I worked in Rochester radio during the week. On the weekends, I did sports in Buffalo on WGR-TV. And in Norfolk, I did mornings radio, and then I did the noon newscast. It was like they said it was like more the Today Show of it was an NBC affiliate. So we did news and interviews and all that, and then I went full time at the TV station, left the radio because they wanted me to do politics.
Where was the last station before you came to Tampa Bay?
Norfolk. Okay. I was in Norfolk for 10 years, and I was rejected from some of the finest TV stations in the country. So I thought, well, I've been in Norfolk 10 years. I've got a lot of friends here. It's not a bad area to live in. And I quit looking for a job. I couldn't buy a job. And then out of the blue, these guys called me. And
Well, this is history.
It was really weird. But I couldn't buy a job. And then they said, hey, how'd you like to come to Florida?
You know what's interesting, I think, in terms of your durability, you're being here for 35 years, is that people, like you say, Chief Dugan now wants to work with you. Yeah. You know, people know you. I felt this myself after I'm here, been here for 17 years now. And I think I'm a better reporter here than if I weren't somewhere else at this point, simply because I just know more people and more connections. You said at the Tiger Bay Club a couple of years ago when you spoke there, you said, there's no substitute for hard work no matter what you do. I put in a lot of hours, but I love it. I have a job I love, but for the reason I have the power of a TV station behind me, and I never forget that. And
it's true, but everything has changed.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
You know,
When I hear you, I know I get this where you want to do these different long-form storytelling and you want to do commentaries, which you really couldn't do. But let's talk about it. Now Gannett owns WTSP, right?
Changed the name.
Okay.
It was Gannett, and they became Tegna.
The same folks who own USA Today, though, right?
Well, but they sold it. See what they did.
Okay.
It was the same folks that owned USA Today. And then they split the newspaper division and the TV division.
Okay.
And Tegna is an amalgamation of some of the letters left from Gannett.
Is that right?
It was sort of a goofy thing. They paid some consultant millions of dollars to come up with it. But anyway, but that's it. They own like 43 TV stations. It's a huge, huge
company.
Now,
I'm sure you've had many different news directors over the years.
17 news directors at Channel 10.
Right.
Just at Channel 10.
Yeah, well, I mean, you don't have to call any names, but like, was the management at the time earlier this year when you said you were going to move on? I mean, were you getting along with management at that point?
I got along with news director really well. But they were going in a different direction.
I see some of this, excuse me, is that I do watch the morning news at the 5 o'clock program when I'm up before I go running, and I know they're all doing the social media thing. They really emphasize that with these young folks on there.
That's what they wanted. That's exactly what they wanted. The morning meetings toward the end of the time I was there, TV stations have morning meetings where they decide what they're going to do for the day. What is trending on Facebook, and that's what we should follow. Whereas my argument would be is we should do something that trends on Facebook. It was sort of like one of my favorite news directors, a former investigative reporter, and every reporter in the morning pitches their stories. So there was one morning where all the general assignment reporters pitched all their stories, and the news director said, now that we've established that every reporter here has read both papers, do we have any journalists here that have stories that will be in the paper tomorrow?
Yeah, you lead the way instead of following.
Yeah, that was always, I always wanted to do a story that would have the newspaper follow up on my story rather than me following.
Not that you necessarily would get credit in the Tampa Bay Times, so that's another story entirely.
Right.
But you got along with management, but you just felt like the trends where they were going there locally here at 10 News was not what you thought was appropriate.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So, my contract was up. It was time. So I thought, well, okay. And we had a big trip planned to Africa, which we went on and all. And I said, well, okay, we'll do that. And then, because we went shortly after I left, and then came back and just sort of started the new phase of my life. And I'm old. I mean, I just turned 69. Most of the reporters there are younger than my kids. You know,
and so
they have different ideas and all, and I came up in a different era. But here is the amazing thing to me: some of the posts that I do on social media get more views than we got viewers at the 11 o'clock news. Really? Yeah. So that's the amazing thing.
Well, it's great. I mean, for you especially, or for me too. I mean, I think all reporters, well, I certainly use Twitter to put every one of my stories out. But on Facebook, personally, I only put select stories out because I think that will be a little sticky, you know, that will get actually some traction. Because I know some things that I write are too inside baseball, right, politically, that people care that much about. But, you know, all of us are, you know, well, this, the public is putting stuff on Facebook every day. But in terms of those of us who want our people to see our stories or read our stories or listen to our stories, you know, Facebook, it gives and it takes us away, you know, but it's a great venue, great vehicle. And again, for you, you know, sitting back and now once a week, you can put this thing up there that wasn't around 10 years ago.
Then I get thousands of views and comments and get people angry, and which is good. But still, Facebook is the 800-pound gorilla.
Yes.
I mean, the deal with Twitter, and I put some stuff on Twitter, though, it's so small. It's news people.
Right.
It's news people. Politicians and some hookers.
Hello.
No, porn stars do a lot of stuff.
Well, people want to get, again, more attention and build up their brand.
But it's so – Twitter compared is so small compared to Facebook.
Right.
I mean, Facebook is the 800-pound gorilla.
No question. And it's been like that. You know, I was at the Poynter Institute back in 2012, maybe, I think it was, and somebody, you said there, that was the time, you know, it was already becoming the biggest one.
Right.
And that was a guy who worked for BuzzFeed, who was really starting to get attention back then. That was 5 years ago, and it's only just gotten bigger. It's almost getting scary how big it's gotten.
It is. And then you fold in the Russians.
You were on Florida this week a few weeks ago, actually, right before the election and mayoral election, I should say, in St. Pete. And you got into it a bit with Pinellas County Democratic Chair Susan McGrath about the relevancy of the saga of Kevin King, who we should remind our listeners, if they're not familiar, is currently Mayor Rick Kreisman's chief of staff in the St. Pete mayoral, in St. Petersburg. And back in 2001, this is going back a ways, but King, just to remind our listeners, was arrested for sending emails to two underage students, 14 and 15, asking them to skip school and drink beer with him back when he was a substitute teacher. Police also said he asked the 14-year-old to perform a sex act on him. The King was 22 at the time. He was fired by the Pinellas County School District. He was arrested and booked into the county jail on three charges, one count of computer solicitation to commit a lewd and lascivious act. The two counts contributed to the delinquency of a minor. This came up, of course, in the campaign. The Rick Baker folks brought it up, and they actually, for 1 week, they brought it up like every day. It, you know, ultimately Kreisman won. Story over. You say no.
I say no. Okay, first I did the story about Kevin when he was working with the Democratic Party.
Right.
I don't remember how many years ago. And then when Kreisman hired him, I did it again. Kevin hates me. You know, that's fine. I have no problem with that. But here's my problem in this new found era of holding people accountable for their sexual misdeeds. I don't understand how some of the Democrats who railed rightfully so about Roy Moore then turn a blind eye to Kevin King. The problem in politics today, is, as far as I'm concerned, is the tribalism.
Right.
You know, my party doesn't matter, and that has gotten us into such a big mess. And so I did one of my commentaries about this because of the Roy Moore thing. I said, you guys are railing against Moore, but defending Kevin King and defending the mayor who has a blind eye to
that. And it's interesting because since that point, and this is a month ago, or really before the election, is that on a national scale, as we got closer to this election with Roy Moore on Tuesday, we saw what the Democrats did just last week, where they basically jettisoned Al Franken and John Franken. John Conyers for their issues. Those two men originally were, I'm going to fight this thing. And then pretty much they were told, you got to go. So the Democrats' hands could be clean going after Roy Moore, President Trump, et cetera. But on this local level, you know, it is interesting. You know, I know the Kreisman folks think, hey, it's a story that's an old story that's been brought up and, you know, we've moved on. I mean, I know the Tampa Bay Times editorialized about this. They thought that the mayor should try to get these records unsealed. I don't even know that's possible, I know on that Florida this week you and Susan went off on each other. How about on Facebook?
Susan went crazy on that. And again,
wait, any other reaction, folks?
I mean, I had numerous hits. A lot of people were upset. The problem, here's the problem, that so many people like Rick Kreisman for his progressive views. And I agree with a lot of his progressive views, but I have a problem with the way he operates in many ways. And I've told him this to his face.
Maybe not as transparent as he should be.
He's not as transparent as he should be. He lied to me straight on about the
Now, let me ask you this, and I saw you talk about that on TV, and that's happened to me. Can you separate yourself? I mean, to be objective when somebody lies to you, because it's very personal when somebody lies to you. I know, you know, in terms of, you know, to trust that person going forward in our regular lives, and it's certainly when a relationship between a journalist and a politician when that happens.
Well, whenever a politician lies to me, and particularly if it's on camera, that tape never goes away. It's like the internet. It never goes away. You know, if you lie to me as a politician, if you screw up. Everybody screws up. Brian Dugan, the chief, the other day said, "Man, when I saw him, he said, I'm so glad you retired." I said, "Really? Why?" He said, "Because you would have killed me on the hearing impaired
woman
doing the sign language."
Thing, yeah.
I said, "You know, Brian, I would have done a story, but I wouldn't. People will accept you handled it well. You made a mistake. Everybody makes mistakes. People can relate to that. What they can't relate to is a cover up, and if you do it again." Let me go back years and years and years and years.
Hey, I just want to interrupt right now. It's 12:27 in the afternoon. You're listening to Midpoint on WMNF. I'm Mitch Perry with Mike Deason, former Channel 10 news reporter. And Mike, I'm sorry, go back into.
Oh, yeah. No, that's right.
And we'll open the phones up in a few minutes here.
Were you here when Hugh Smith was at Channel 13?
No.
Okay. Hugh Smith was the Walter Cronkite of this market. He had been on, and 13 was the 800-pound gorilla when he was there. Their ratings were.
And they were a Fox affiliate, but they were
No, they were CBS.
Yeah, okay.
His market went. We were ABC.
ABC, okay.
That was crazy.
Right.
They went through this change. 13 was CBS, we were ABC, 28 was Fox, and 8 was always NBC. And then we went through the big shift because Fox became the parent company of 13. Anyhow, Hugh was the Walter Cronkite of this market, and they had massive ratings, Mr. Credibility, Mr. Believability. And then he was arrested not far from here on Nebraska Avenue for picking up an undercover police officer soliciting for
prostitution.
So the next day, we broke the story, and the next day it's big news and all, and at the Hillsborough Courthouse, he comes out and stands on the steps of the Hillsborough Courthouse after his PP appearance and said, "I have stood for truth in this community for 30 years. I'm not going to say that I was entrapped. I'm not going to say that I was doing an undercover investigation. I'm not going to say anything but the truth. I did it. It was wrong, it was stupid, and I will never do it again." They suspended him for a week. He was back on the air. His ratings were through the roof again.
That wouldn't probably happen these days.
Well, no, but then
he
did it again.
Oh.
I
did it again.
Yeah, oops. But what I'm saying is, you're right.
Culture's different, but I mean, we were saying about being... You know, all of us, especially politicians, especially media people, have to be accountable. I mean, this is really intense. Again, we're going through this whole sexual harassment Me Too era right now. And I guess going back, just to put a button on this thing with King, I know that's why you think that locally Dems have just been, like, hypocritical.
Absolutely hypocritical. I cannot understand why they don't say, no, we cannot do this. Look at what's going on. I mean, Al Franken did so much smaller transgressions than King was accused of. I just cannot believe the local Dems go, no, that's okay. It was a long time ago.
Right. We're over the phones up here now. 813-239-9663 is the phone number. It's about 12:30 in the afternoon here. You're listening to Midpoint on WMNF 88.5 FM, talking with Mike Deason, former Channel 10 news reporter, about what he's doing now and about the industry itself. I just want to go, before we go to or take our first call, I want to make sure you can also email us at dj@wmnf.org. Let me just, before we get into it, you, of course, Mike, you were probably our most famous television journalist in town. In your ways, I mean, certainly some politicians did not like your style at times. And even I talked to a reporter not too long ago who said, you know, Mike Deason, did some stories, but he was a gotcha journalist. And I said, well, you know, gotcha journalist, that's a derisive term. I mean, Mike Wallace certainly was, famous at CBS at 60 Minutes for times when he couldn't get somebody to talk to him, would go, throw a microphone in his face. What do you say when you've heard that?
Well, here's the deal.
Yeah.
I didn't think I did ambush interviews because everybody that I did an interview with, that I was doing a story about, I would call and say, here's the story. It's a negative story. I wouldn't lie and say, well, we're going to do a nice, warm, fuzzy. This is a negative story, and I want to know what you have to say. And they sometimes would say, okay, we'll sit down and talk with you, blah, 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 blah. Or sometimes they would say, I don't have any comments about that. And I would say, that's perfectly fine. However, I am doing TV news, and if you want to say no comment, you're going to have to say that on camera. And I am going to track you down, and I'll even tell you where I'll be. And if I miss you there, I'll tell you again if you want. I said, but I will ask you that question on camera. And I advise you to do the interview in your office where it's your kingdom rather than on the street where it's my kingdom. But I always track people down. Jamie Grant,
right.
The state rep. Well, I did a bunch of stories about
grand jury
investigating how he was able to get money from the Hardy County for a business that he did not have, nor that didn't have a product when he got the grant. It was millions of dollars. So when I finally needed to get a hold of Jamie, I waited outside of a bar in St. Pete.
I was there that night, actually, Cassis in St. Pete.
Right.
That's when my now boss, Peter Source, was having an event that night.
That's right. Yeah. And Peter knew I was there, but I waited 4 hours outside the bar, and then he ditched me and went out the back. It was just irritated the hell out of me, but I knew I was going to get him because the session was coming up, and he'd either have to sleep in his office or, but I told him, and I went to his house several times, and I never just popped up and they went, oh, what are you doing here?
I know, what's he thinking? Like, somehow he could avoid you. I see this with your colleague, your former colleague, Noah Pransky, with Ken Hagin.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Where it's just rough to watch that. Yeah, and
here's
with
the
Bob
deal.
Buckhorn, yeah.
They work for us. Yes, particularly politicians. I felt no problem in going after a politician. They work for us. We do not work for them. And as their boss, we are their boss. I have a right to call you out and ask you, what the hell are you doing? Why did you do that? So, yeah, if they want to say that's gotcha journalism, that's fine. That's what I'm all about.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's go to our calls. We've got some callers in the line here. Again, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Paul, who's been waiting the longest here. He's calling in from Tampa. Hi, Paul, you're on the air. Oh, let's see. Go there again. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, I just wanted to say that while we obviously want to, stamp out sexual harassment, sexual misconduct, I think this entire campaign of allegations of sexual harassment is deeply anti-democratic and reactionary. And I think it's being used to distract the American people from far more important issues like the tax bill that is being rammed down our throats, the FCC changing net neutrality rules, and the Trump administration threatening war with North Korea and Iran. People are being accused of things. There's no due process. There is no presumption of innocence. In some cases, these people haven't violated the law. It's just like, misconduct. And what they're doing is they're actually running out people with progressive values. Look at Al Franken. Now look at them going after Matt Taibbi. Right? What are they really doing here? They're just getting rid of voices they don't.
Well, but it's been more than just liberals, though, have been going down. Though
I'm not saying that isn't, but you see that they can use it against anyone.
But Paul,
voice can get silent.
But okay, here's part of the deal,
it's
Paul.
Totally anti-democratic.
Wouldn't Kristen Gillibrand is anti-democratic?
Yes, the process is anti-democratic.
No, but she's the Democratic senator from...
Well, you mean small D Democratic.
Oh, small D. Okay, all right.
There's a big D.
Yeah.
Presumption of innocence is a basic democratic principle.
No, I think you're saying, we'll go with, thank you, Paul. Paul said two things there. One is, the basic premise, he was just arguing, we don't have to repeat that, but also that it's distracting. And I do think that I will disagree respectfully on that, only because he knows about the tax bill and he knows about net neutrality, which, by the way, they are voting on today. I believe the FCC commission is when it's expected
unless
to pass.
Unless it gets postponed because of the fake emails.
I didn't know hear about that.
Okay, there are 10,000, I think the number, I might be off on that, emails favoring the FCC going ahead and
doing this,
and they've turned out to be by fake sources. It's like identity theft of these names.
Okay. So the vote may be delayed because of that.
Well, 18 attorney generals throughout the country have filed a lawsuit and asked the FCC to postpone it. They probably won't, but that's just an aside.
Right. Okay. So I want to hear your take on just what his thrust was, but I would say in the second part there, I'm going to disagree about that. I think the sexual harassment stories now, and some of them, they're all very sensational. We had the latest last night with Russell Simmons, a huge story in this morning's New York Times about him, the hip hop producer. We have Tava Smiley now from PBS. And in some cases, I'll just say that, in terms of distraction, there's, again, depending on where you get your news, I don't know one major, and I did watch CBS this morning, the CBS morning show this morning. They did a lot on the tax bill. That's as mainstream as it gets. So I disagree that it's a distraction. Now, the other point, what he was making, though, in terms of, maybe being, again, small d, anti-democratic. It is interesting, Mike, in terms of how we go through this situation right now, because there's been some individual cases where I think maybe an individual, I feel for that person because it looks like, for example, Ryan Lizza, a reporter for New Yorker, who just lost his gig the other day, and he says it has not been published whatever the allegations are. So I do think in some cases it is getting a little bit, I don't know. I mean, maybe unfair, but I'd like to hear your thoughts.
No, I would agree 100%. Yeah. But
others are great to see them go down.
I think of some of the women who have been placed in these positions. Think of, let's go to our industry, Matt Lauer, who locked people in his office.
Horrible.
And in our industry, some people who are trying to get ahead. And think about the Roger Ailes thing over at Fox.
Despicable.
About women who are trying to advance their career. And you have some guy saying, yeah, I can help you advance your career. I'll tell you how, sweetheart. I think it's an important issue, and that the women who are coming forward now are brave and should be applauded, as Time Magazine obviously thought with their cover for the person of the year.
I 100% with you on that. I do think that each one is an individual case and should be looked at as such instead of just throw all the guys out. I think, and what do you think about the distraction, the story idea that's a quote unquote distraction?
There's.
Donald Trump is a distraction. Look at it that way.
That's right. Look at all the 13 women that have come talking about him. But, our society is thrown into it's almost like visual cacophony with all the news, the 24-hour news cycle, everything that's thrown at us, and your head is spinning. Social media, everybody's looking at all these stories. So that is one more item in the mix,
right.
But I don't think that is the main distraction.
I mean, you could say, and I do think that, again, when Donald Trump tweets, for example, people just go hysterical and write about all morning long, and that is very much could be considered a distraction from other things because the media is focused on maybe where they shouldn't be. I mean, again, there's a lot of media, so you could always find these stories out there for the most part,
right.
But it's mass appeal, I guess, is important. Okay, let's go to Ashley in Tampa. Hi, Ashley.
Hello?
Yes.
I was just going to make a comment on all this sexual innuendo stuff in politics.
Mm-hmm.
My dad used to have this saying. It was, the names and faces may change, but the story remains the same. This has been going on forever. But hey, it's all according to how long you'll beat a dead horse.
Well, but Ashley, things have changed. The media was quite aware of John Kennedy's affairs, but did nothing about it because people were friendlier with politicians. They were aware of Lyndon Johnson's affairs when he was president. Everything Watergate changed everything. That was
in the 70s, we had free love and all that, so sexuality was not a hidden thing. And once it came out in the open, somehow or another, we lost our innocence. And then everybody was like, okay, whatever. But, All I'm saying is, here we are today, and, like, you know, how long you want to keep beating the dead horse is how long you'll stand there.
All right. What's the dead? I'm sorry. What's the dead horse, Ashley?
Yes, sir.
What are you calling the dead horse here?
You know, whipping the dead horse. You stand there and whip a dead horse, you don't go nowhere.
Okay, but what's the dead horse here? Sexual allegations of sexual harassment?
Well, all the political stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Keep eating and eating and eating away with it, digging a deeper and deeper hole.
All right. Okay, man, I don't really understand what you're talking about. Okay, 12:04 in the afternoon, you're listening to WN. Oh, and somebody wrote to me and said, Mitch, you ignore the Kevin King story. You're a hypocrite. No, I actually did write about it when Rick Kreisman came into office back in 2013. You can read about it. I did not write about it after that, but I did write about it in Creative Loafing newspaper. So, no, not a hypocrite. Okay, Daryl in Tampa. Hi, Daryl.
Hey, how you doing?
Great.
I would just like to use one word, and I hope it's the right word, mantra. It's the American way, but it's not exclusively to America. Admit to nothing, lie about everything. Okay. For example, Gulf of Tonkin incident. We lost 58,000 guys behind the lie. Okay. We have a president who, before he got into political office, the president now, lied about everything. Lied. And he lies now. That wasn't me on the video. Oh, so now we can't believe what we see in the video, and you were giggling and chuckling about it. But that's what...
Yeah.
So you got a kid who goes to a totalitarian country now, China, and he steals. His daddy, you know, wants to shield him from the consequences. So pulls him out of UCLA, pulls his younger son out of high school, hadn't even graduated. What kind of message is that sending? You want to talk about trickle down? It's trickling down from the top to the bottom.
Right.
Our country is founded on that stuff.
Yeah.
We could go to Ronald Reagan with, you know, how many Marines were killed in Lebanon, and they shielded him.
Well, I remember Reagan, he actually blamed Jimmy Carter for that back in 1983. Thank you, Daryl. I'm going to move on here.
Yeah.
The point, Mike, I think part of it, what Daryl's saying there is this, and it's certainly what Trump, Trump lies so often. Let's just be flat out frank with it. I mean, I always thought
the
it was
New York Times did had a list of all his lies. It's just
it does,
incredible.
Bring down our culture in a way. I mean, I remember going to rallies for Hillary Clinton last year during the campaign and talking to Trump supporters, and I said, you know, what's the biggest thing you don't like about Hillary Clinton? She's a liar, they would tell me. And you know, like all politicians, she probably hasn't told the truth on everything, no doubt. But I mean, this guy does take it to a new level, and it happens on a daily basis.
And
what does that do for a culture, or what does that do for our journalism, you know?
Well, for journalism, it's great. Holding people accountable. There's a story all the time. There's a breaking story every single day out of the administration. So from a journalistic standpoint, I would think that if I could rewrite anything, I wish I could be a reporter in Washington right now covering the administration. It would be so exciting. It truly would be exciting. But it's not good for our body politic.
Right, yeah.
And I think that we need to get back to some decency.
Another story that you did, Mike, I was thinking about that I looked up, you did with Buckhorn, Bob Buckhorn, was about Sonia Little, the city of Tampa's chief financial officer who makes $190,000 a year, one of the highest paid city staffers. And she, for many years, I think this has changed now, but for many years, she did not live in the city of Tampa, which is a violation of the city charter requiring her to be a city resident. You went hard on this story more than any other local media organization did. And Buckhorn, you know, rebuked you and said, well, she's the interim CEO. Which was, you know, kind of nonsense, right?
I mean, absolutely. Yeah. She was interim CEO for like five and a half years. Absolutely. It really drove me crazy. I'm a big guy about playing by the rules, and you can't just pick and choose which rules you're going to follow. Now, I know Bob for more than 30 years. You know, we get along. He handles my criticism better than Rick Kreisman. I told Rick Kreisman at one point, I said, "You are the most thin-skinned big city mayor that I have ever dealt with in my career." there, and I stand by that statement today. But Bob handles it better. But Bob chooses to, this is what puts some people off about Bob. Bob chooses to follow the rules he likes and ignore the rules he doesn't like. And you just can't do that. So I thought that was an important story. And now this is the final cap on it.
Yeah.
They say she has moved to the city. However, they won't give me her address because there's an exemption in the Public Records Act that says anybody who is involved in collecting and enforcing money collections for a governmental organization, has their address is not a public record.
I just thought it was like for law enforcement people, but now they're doing it for people.
I'm on the board of the First
Amendment. Expanding, right, all these exemptions.
The legislature tries to do it all the time. I'm on the board of the First Amendment Foundation, which is a group of attorneys and journalists.
Barbara Peterson.
Yep. And we fight the legislature. We have, going into the legislature, I get an email every day of the new bills that have been introduced, our stance on them, and they always try to expand the exemptions, and that's one of them. So I have to take the city's word.
Oh, that's interesting. I did not know that. So we don't really know for sure that she was in the city because, well, they can't get that information out.
That's right.
All right. Let's go back to the phone. Again, it's 813-239-9663. We're talking with Mike Deason for the next 15 minutes here on Midpoint on WMNF. Let's go to Dave in Clearwater. Hi, Dave. Dave, you there?
Yeah, I'm there.
Hey.
Hi, Mitch.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I wanted to ask Mike, in his career at WTSB, you said something like 35 years, was it?
Yes, sir.
In that time, how many stories did you see killed or altered to protect advertisers or someone friendly to the station? And in addition to that, I'd be interested in hearing your comments on what you think of Sinclair Broadcasting's attempt to purchase, I think it's something like 70% of the local television stations in the country. Now, what implications does that have for local media?
Good questions. Okay. As far as stories killed because of advertisers, one. And it was in the past year, which is another reason that I saw things were changing. And it wasn't killed at the local level. The local level fought for it, but because Tegna owns 43 TV stations, and this particular advertiser spends millions of dollars with them, they never really killed the story. But let me tell you the process real quickly of our stories. When I would do a story, we would have a meeting every Monday, and the investigative meeting, and everybody in the investigative unit would pitch stories, and they would go, yeah, I like it, no, I don't like it, blah, 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 and then you would go with the stories. For example, the Jamie Grant story in Hardy County, I had a pitch over and over and over again. I started working on it in August of 2012. It didn't get on the air till March of 2013. And I had a fight for that story. Anyhow, so we make our pitches. Then you go ahead with the story and all. And this was a story about an advertiser. And we had it nailed cold. So wrote the story. And then when I would finish a story, it would then go to our producer for our unit, who would make changes, look at it, our executive producer, then to our news director, and then to our attorney in Washington. And I would be on the witness stand. And they would say, well, how do you know this? What document do you have that? I mean, so our stories were vetted really well. I mean, I was sued several times, never lost a lawsuit because anybody can file a lawsuit because we vetted them. So we had this down cold. It was nailed. And we do it, and at that point, corporate, sometimes they wanted to see the stories we were doing from the investigative unit, and they looked at it, and they picked apart some things they didn't like. And I said to our news director, what's with it? He said, well, let's finish this, blah, blah, blah. So we did it, sent it back up one day. More questions back. I remember sitting in his office one day as he's answering the questions to the corporate news director, and he's pounding on the keyboard, talking out loud, we answered this question last time, blah, 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 blah. And it went on for like two and a half months. And finally, the news director and the GM, to his credit, also said, look, we can keep spinning our wheels on this story. They're not saying don't run it, but we have wasted so much. I went to Miami to talk to the attorney for this company. I mean, we spent a ton of time on this story. And finally, at the local level, we all said, this is distracting us, and maybe we'll get it on the air, maybe we won't. But corporate killed that story. But that is the only time, the only time. Now, let me also say that every time I did a story on Rick Kreisman, he would pick up the phone and call our general manager and complain about it. And then our general manager said, well, why did you have to continually pick on Kreisman? I said, if he doesn't do stupid things, I won't pick on him. It's not my fault. He said, well, you know, we're in St. Pete and we've got to deal with the city. Are you sure? Yeah, blah, blah, blah. But
they let him do your, you still, did that stop you at all?
That's right. I certainly did my stories. So they were pretty good at
Well, that's interesting to know. I mean, it's a good question to know. Like, no, it's really, for three decades.
Yeah.
And you're saying really only one story spiked. It's funny because I was looking over some old sound of mine recently, and you remember your colleagues over at Fox when they did that story about bovine growth hormone.
Right.
That was a big national story about network stopping story. And I went over that actually recently. I was looking at those notes from like 15-18 years ago, I guess it was. The Sinclair Broadcasting.
I have very grave concerns about Sinclair Broadcasting. I'll tell you, I have grave concerns about the company I work for, Tegna, owning 43 stations. There, it used to be that you could have, I think I have this number right, 5 a.m., 5 FM, and 7 TV stations. That was a reasonable amount. When you have the broadcast facilities in control of just a few corporations, then you can get a political agenda. And certainly with Sinclair, there is a political agenda where they have to run these commentaries that are clearly very right-wing leaning. You don't get an honest amount of discourse on the public airwaves that we own. The broadcasters have the right to use the public airwaves. And so I have grave concern. I wish the FCC would consolidate the amount of stations any one group could own. That certainly with this
not
FCC,
it's not going to happen.
It can never go back because the conglomerates are too big. But I have grave concerns. Hope that answers your question.
Yeah, okay, great. Okay, we've got five callers on the line here, so we want to get through about 8 minutes ago here. Let's go to Lisa in Clearwater. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I'm just picking up on a topic about city employees living within the city. I find that in Clearwater, I'll be talking to a city employee and, you know, about this or that, and say, well, and then they'll say, well, I don't live in the city.
Yeah, but Lisa, here's the deal. The city charter in Tampa, rather, requires all department heads to live in the city.
Just the department heads?
Just the department heads, yeah.
Okay, so I'll have to follow up on the Clearwater Charter and see, because I came from a town many years ago where all the city employees had to live within the city limits. It is frustrating when you're talking to a city employee about something and you can tell they think it's wrong or you know, they don't agree, but they'll say, well, what can I say? I don't live in Clearwater.
Well, but it's even more frustrating when you're dealing with a department head who makes the rules that they don't have to live under. That's where it really, which is the reason for it. I think it's a good law.
I'm going to check into that. Thanks for that information.
Sure, Lisa.
Can I ask you one follow-up? You may have already covered this, and I did check in too late, but the St. Pete Times, like, I actually asked a reporter, I said, well, you know, you have some conflicts here because of these organizations in Clearwater. They give you a lot of advertising money, and she got all huffy about it, and we're completely independent of that, and that is an insult. And so I'm asking you, maybe you've already covered it, but...
Reliable journalistic organizations, and this was true with us, and I think for the most part the other organizations, the sales side and the news editorial side are completely separate. They're on a different floor. A lot of people in our newsroom didn't even know who the salespeople were. I know at Fox, I had a friend who was a salesperson at Fox. They weren't allowed to go into the newsroom at all. Some of that is changing with the different corporate culture, but for the most part, it's really separate.
Okay, great.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say, though, again, I work for a man who is Peter Sorish, who is a consultant, and there's definitely, criticism of whether there's fair play in our website. And I would just say that I've been, with the exception of one or two stories, I've been allowed to do basically everything I've ever wanted to do with him. Because again, I hear that, you know, from people who are thinking that, you know, my reporting is being influenced because I learned in the Tampa Bay Times back in June that Richard Corcoran sent us a check for $20,000.
Although, Peter, I heard Peter say once, I thought it was a great line. He said, I'm like a maitre d' at a restaurant. So some people may pay to get a better table quicker, but everybody's going to get a table, but the ones who pay me get the table quicker. I thought that was a great...
Well, he's very unique in his own thing because he still does his own columns. That's and his it. Own, you know, but we have a lot of other good reporters up and down the state of Florida, I believe. Okay, let's go to Nathaniel in Gulfport. Hi, Nathaniel, you're on the air.
Hi, so I'm sorry, I haven't been able to listen to the show, so I'm not exactly up to your topic, but when it comes to news stories, I'm curious, why isn't the idea of getting more coverage that if someone is slanderous towards you, you have the right to sue them? So, you know, Donald Trump should be suing these women who have caused him slanderous. This guy Moore should be suing these women who have said these things about him if they're not true. So therein is a fact that we just cannot ignore. Moore is not doing lawsuits against these women for slander, even though they've obviously cost him financial, you know, issues. They've definitely hurt his character and his ability to do his job by saying what they're saying. So they are absolutely opening themselves up for a lawsuit. The answer is the reason he doesn't want to have a lawsuit against them, and Donald Trump doesn't want to have a lawsuit against those women, is because they would have to go into court, into the discovery period in court. And the discovery period in court would prove that these women are right, and they're liable to get thrown out of court. That's why, and I think that's a great story that needs to be covered, because it proves by their inaction that their accusations must be true.
Well, I would just say this about that. There's one woman who is pursuing a lawsuit against Trump, one of the women who is accusing him of, I think it was one beauty contest.
Yeah, right.
And this could very well end up going to court a la Bill Clinton versus Paula Jones. So just wait for that to happen. You know, I mean, so...
Well, she's suing them back.
Yeah.
She's suing Trump back,
right,
saying that she was a liar. See, that's exactly my point. Trump could sue her.
Take well, he's not going to sue her. He's not. Whoa. He said he was going to, but he's not.
Yeah, he's not. And yeah. Roy Moore is not either. No.
He doesn't want to face
okay.
that period in court.
Right. Okay. All right. You got your point across, Nathaniel? Okay. All right. Let's see. Steve in Tampa. We've only got a couple minutes left to go here. Hi, Steve.
Hello. Good afternoon, guys.
Hey.
Hey.
I'd like to get Mike's opinion. You know, he was talking about Bob Buckhorn, you know, picking and choosing which laws and which rules he chooses to follow. And I was just curious, what is your opinion on the sanctuary cities that doesn't follow federal statute? And also, what is your opinion about some of Mueller's investigators and some of the recent texts that have kind of just come to light?
Let's talk about that, because that's really in the news now. And I watched those hearings all day yesterday, and I thought that Joe Jordan and Trey Gowdy were going to have heart attacks with their
Jim Jordan.
Jim Jordan,
of Ohio,
yeah, Jim, yeah, yeah. Joe Jordan's a musician. Here is the deal: the text that came to light resulted in the firing or the removal of
Jim Comey.
Not of Comey, of the FBI agent.
He was canned, right?
He was canned. Scorn.
Yeah,
how to pronounce it? Because you got an extra consonant in there. That came out, and they found it. And in August, he was removed from the investigation. As soon as they found that out, they removed him from the investigation. Now, certainly there are folks on the investigative committee that supported Hillary Clinton, but there are also Republicans on the investigative committee that supported Trump, that are lifelong Republicans. And remember that Mueller is a Republican. There are a lot of Republican people in there. You don't turn off, even as a reporter, you don't let your political leanings delve into the story, but you still you have opinions and you vote. I think I've never missed an election in my life because I think it's our obligation to vote. So I think that the Justice Department, remember, This is under a Republican attorney general, a Republican assistant attorney general who is now watching over Mueller.
Right.
So what happens is in Washington now, if people don't like what people are finding out, it's fake news or they're lying. That's not true. That's just not true. Four people have been either indicted or two have pled guilty. Four have been indicted. You can't say there's nothing there. There is something there, and it's going to continue.
It's been a year, though, and they haven't found anything.
Wait.
Less than a year.
Wait. Two people have been indicted. Two have pled guilty. They have found things.
Yes, but here's the thing, though.
Quickly, you got to go quickly.
The dossier which allowed the Pfizer warrants to be issued was, I think it was proven that it was discredited and it wasn't vetted and it was completely wrong.
No, I don't think that's been true.
That's not true at all.
We don't know.
We don't know.
It is. Yeah, okay, so we're going to go. And we're going to leave it there, actually. I'm sorry, Ann, we can't get you right now. We want to say thank you, Mike Deason. Good show, man, if I do say so myself. Thanks so much for coming in today.
I had a great time, Mitch.
Yeah, looking forward to the book
and
coming in.
And let me say,
yeah.
Mitch is one of the best political reporters I've ever seen in our area. You ought to read everything he does.
Oh, too kind. Well, I want to tell folks that you are listening to WNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. I'm actually going to be going home to California the next couple of weeks. I won't be here until January, actually. But I look forward to seeing and listening, hearing, talking to you again in January of 2018. I want to thank Al Edie's been our engineer James Wells taking the phone calls. You are again listening to WNO Tampa. Happy holidays, everybody. See you soon.